From South Carolina Public Radio, this is the South Carolina Lead. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on September 20th, 2024, from South Carolina Public Radio Studios here in Columbia. On this episode of The Lead, we look at the Fed rate cut with USC research economist Dr. Joy Von Nessen. I'm putting that at the front because we have so much in this podcast, guys, including going up to Congress, where a hearing on hate crimes became heated with Senator Lindsey Graham and some others. Then we're going to hop on the campaign trail for a roundup of some of the most interesting things that happened this week. Let's put it that way. Some stuff that you might have missed. This week was one of the biggest news years of the year. Yes, I tried to encapsulate it for you because you probably missed some of it. The Lead loves hearing from you. Give us a shout, 803-563-7169. Make our year. Give us a shout, 803-563-7169. We want to hear from you. We need something to distract ourselves with. Let's start with the big economic news. Yes, so we can get to the bluster and rhetoric of the presidential campaign trail in a minute, but I want to bring you some dollars and cents news, and that means the Federal Reserve's 0.5% rate cut. Yes, the first rate cut in some 4 years, as the Fed acknowledges that after 11 interest rate increases up to 5.5%, that the moves have in fact brought down inflation enough to support a cut, especially as the labor market also cools. It's fall, y'all. It actually is. USC research economist Dr. Joy Von Nessen told me about the significance and the ramifications of this decision when he talked to me on This Week in South Carolina. And we also talked a little bit about politics, guys.
The economy right now in South Carolina and at the national level is very strong. Mm-hmm. And we see that in terms of steady consumer spending, which is the principal contributor to GDP. We see that in the form of a strong labor market and also strong wage growth. And I would suggest that if we were going to give the economy a grade, mm-hmm. We graded it B+, because most metrics are positive, but we still have that lagging effect of the loss in purchasing power that most Americans have felt, and they have not been able to claw back that loss in purchasing power yet. So that's still a major challenge. So that's why we see a B+. But overall, a strong economy in terms of where we are in September 2024. Mm. But we are losing momentum and have been losing momentum throughout the year. And so what the Fed's decision basically means is that they're taking that loss in momentum seriously. They're trying to get ahead of it and make sure that we can preserve the strong economy that we have today and that we don't continue to see a loss in momentum that leads to a downturn in the coming months.
That loss in momentum was, I guess, slang for a soft landing, essentially.
Exactly.
Too. That,
exactly.
You know, trying to avert that hard landing after, you know, coming out of the pandemic, and there's all that talk about recession. No one's talking about recession right now. We're talking about trying to walk this fine line, and it seems like they're doing it right now.
They are. They've done a very good job so far, and this also signals that they are pivoting to a focus on the labor market that is about a 50-50 split. In other words, the Fed is just as concerned now with preserving the health of the labor market mm-hmm. as they have been with keeping inflation low. And the other factor here is that it does signal confidence that inflation is largely under control now. At 2.5%, inflation is not licked yet, mm-hmm. But we're getting closer. Remember, the Fed's goal is 2.0%. And we've seen meaningful improvement in that direction. And this also signals the Fed's confidence that inflation will continue to tick downwards in the coming months, so they can focus more on making sure the labor market remains strong.
Yeah, their dual mandate right there. So then, Joey, what can the average American expect to see out of this? Lower mortgage rates, lower borrowing costs? What are we going to see trickle down from this?
Yes, both of those. So in general, we're going to see Americans pay less for big ticket items on things they would normally be borrowing money for. The housing market is likely to see some significant impact. And the challenge in the housing market really has been a lack of inventory. Mm. When we look at the high levels of prices in most markets, that's certainly true in South Carolina, particularly in the coastal areas like Myrtle Beach and in Charleston and Hilton Head. But those high prices, largely the result of a lack of supply, a lack of inventory. And part of that lack of inventory has been that existing homeowners have not been willing or been interested in selling their home.
That 3% rate?
That 3% rate,
you don't want to get that 7% mortgage instead, yeah.
If you're locked into 3%, then a 6 or 7% is not attractive. Mm-hmm. And so now we might see some more movement there, and that could help free up some inventory. And the housing market, from a sales perspective, has seen a significant downturn in the last couple of years. So this will help to further stabilize it.
And our housing market's a little bit more pinched, too, than maybe the rest of America, since we're such a fast-growing state, too.
Very much so. We had the highest population growth rate in the country in the last 12 months. So more people are moving in, generating high levels of demand, and the lack of supply, the lack of inventory, creates a major mismatch. And it's really the first time in 20 plus years that we've seen this decoupling between growth in sales and growth in prices. We've seen a double-digit pullback in sales activity, and yet prices continue to rise.
Of course, the election can be a big factor here. So what do you tell folks when maybe they're telling you one thing about the economy when you know it's very much the opposite of the case? What should they be doing?
Well, I think in general, when we're looking at the election, when we're looking at how the economy is going to unfold in 2025, while different candidates have different policies and we're just seeing those be debuted now, we don't know what the specifics look like. But the fundamentals of the economy are going to remain strong regardless. And as we look ahead to 2025, we have to look at broader patterns in terms of how an election could influence the economy. And if we look more broadly, one of the things that we do see is that both parties are more engaged in what I would call active and industrial policy, meaning that we've moved away from globalization and more of a free market focus, and that's especially apparent on tariffs. Mm-hmm. So one thing that there's a lot of uncertainty about what specific policies will be implemented next year, but I think one thing that we can say, regardless of who's elected, is that tariffs are likely to be a part of it, because both parties have suggested a willingness to use tariffs in their policies going forward.
All right, that was just a little warm up there for what we're about to talk about. But watch that entire interview. It's super interesting from Joey. He's always got the latest for us. You can find that interview on youtube.com/South Carolina ETV. Let's go to Washington.
Why? Why?
Well, that's where lawmakers still have not passed any funding legislation to avoid a partial government shutdown come the end of September. One of their jobs.
Okay, let's go.
This after House Speaker Mike Johnson's attempt to pass a six-month funding bill that also included a controversial non-citizen voting provision. That failed Wednesday 202 to 220, with 14 Republicans voting against it, 2 Republicans voting present, and 3 Democrats voting for it. Now, a clean version of this bill that would not include that voting provision is seen as the only way forward, but the leader of the Republican Party, Donald Trump, doesn't want that and is pressuring those on Capitol Hill. Now, non-citizens, as you know, are not legally allowed to vote in the United States in elections already, and the Republican provision has already passed the House as a standalone bill, so it's giving immigration reform here, folks. Sticking with Congress, the U.S. Senate, specifically, the Judiciary Committee on Tuesday held a hearing on hate crimes in America, specifically the ongoing and persistent rise of anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, anti-Arab hate, and other forms of bigotry. This was born out of a request by Republicans earlier this year to look at an increase of anti-Semitic demonstrations and situations occurring on college campuses, and it was expanded to include Arabs and Muslims as well. But for Senator Lindsey Graham, who is the ranking member on the committee, below Chairman Dick Durbin, he was focused on the rise of anti-Semitism and also the chilling effect on free speech. Here's Graham and Durbin.
One of our witnesses says calling for the genocide of the state of Israel should not get you disciplined. It should. It should. You know, when David Duke was on college's campuses in his time handing out Nazi stuff, he should have been disciplined. I disagree with that. I believe in free speech, but I don't believe advocating for the killing of an entire class of people. That's not free speech. So what we have before us today as a nation is a moment of choosing. We can choose to ignore this, lump it in with every other problem we got in the country, or we can focus on it. I prefer to focus on it. I prefer to let the American Jewish community know enough is enough. We're going to be there for you. We're going to have your back. And we're not rising to the occasion. I would urge my friends on the other side, let's have a hearing focused on this problem, not lumping this problem in with every other problem we have. This is unique to the time in which we live. It is getting out of control. As to rhetoric, yeah, we can all do better. I get that. But this idea that one group is going to destroy America, or one person's going to destroy America, needs to come to an end. Nobody's going to destroy America. The Iranians would, if they could.
Senator Graham, you and I agree on more than we disagree. And we certainly agree that hate crimes should be treated seriously, whatever their origin, whatever their purpose. They are unacceptable in this nation of ours. Prioritizing which group is being discriminated against the worst, I don't believe is a valid exercise of our authority here. What we are trying to do is to identify a problem in America that extends beyond Jewish population to the Arab population, to the Palestinian population. All of those hate crimes are unacceptable. All of them are unacceptable. The letter which you asked me to enter into the record calls on us to pass a bill that I know of quite well, the Domestic Terrorism Prevention Act. That bill passed the House of Representatives. It was called by Senator Schumer in the Senate. It's a bill that I sponsored. It was stopped on the floor and filibustered by the Republican side. I don't want to draw a conclusion about their views on hatred and violence, but I think we all ought to acknowledge the fact that work needs to be done and we shouldn't tie ourselves in knots, but should work toward ending hate crimes in America.
Graham also elaborated on the harassment of Jewish students on college campuses, as well as Israel's fight for survival amid escalating Middle East tensions and the nearing year anniversary of the Hamas attack. He also spoke with Kenneth Stern. He's the director of the Bard Center for the Study of Hate, who is one of the experts before the committee.
What's going on in colleges today? There's an organized effort to intimidate, harass, and physically assault Jewish students. What's going on today is an effort on multiple fronts to wipe Israel off the map. This is not an academic discussion. You agree with me if African-American students are being called the N-word and harassed and belittled by other students, those students should pay a price for that.
I think if there's any type of harassment, it doesn't matter the word.
Yeah.
But if the students are being harassed.
Well, the word does matter if you're African American.
Well, what I'm saying is that no harassment should be tolerated.
Well, right.
That way.
There you go. That's good. So the idea that you could hold somebody accountable for using words makes sense to me, because free speech is a concept that we all hold near and dear. But words start wars. Words can incite violence.
You may have also seen the exchange with Louisiana Republican Senator John Kennedy with Maya Berry, who's the executive director of the Arab American Institute. This took place during that hearing as well. Listen to this edited exchange.
You support Hamas, do you not?
Senator, oddly enough, I'm going to say thank you for that question because it demonstrates the purpose of our hearing today in a very effective way.
Let's start first with a yes or no.
Hamas is a foreign terrorist organization that I do not support, but you asking the executive director of the Arab American Institute that question very much puts the focus on the issue of hate in our country.
Well, I got your answer, and I appreciate it. You support Hezbollah, too, don't you?
Again, I find this line of questioning extraordinarily disappointing, Senator.
No? Let me ask you one more time. You support Hamas, don't you? You support UNRWA and Hamas, don't you?
Sir,
please.
I think it's exceptionally disappointing that you're looking at an Arab American witness before you and saying you support Hamas.
You know what's disappointing to me?
I do not support Hamas.
You can't bring yourself
I do not support Hamas.
You don't support UNRWA. You don't support Hamas. You don't.
I was very clear in my support for
UNRWA. Hezbollah, and you don't support
Iran.
You should hide your head in a bag.
Your time has expired. Please.
So you heard Kennedy mention UNRWA, which is the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees. So quite the exchange there during a hearing on hate crimes. That warmed us up for the campaign trail. So let's jump on it. We're starting with some comments from Trump's running mate, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance. Now, he started off the week with that fiery CNN interview where he admitted to creating stories for attention. We already played that for you, so we're not doing that again. But also on Sunday, he reacted to the Trump whisperer slash conspiracy theorist slash 9/11 truther slash white nationalist supporter Laura Loomer's racist tweet that the White House would smell like curry if Kamala Harris was elected. Harris's mother is Indian, as are Vance's wife, Usha's parents. Kristen Welker on NBC News' Meet the Press asked Vance about that tweet.
Laura Loomer is not affiliated with the Trump campaign. She said something about curry in the White House that I first read about this morning, actually, because I knew that you would ask me about it. Look, Kristen, I make a mean chicken curry. I don't think that it's insulting for anybody to talk about their dietary preferences or what they want to do in the White House. I think what Laura said about Kamala Harris is not what we should be focused on. We should be focused on the policy and on the issues. And look, so yeah, do I agree with what Laura Loomer said about Kamala Harris? No, I don't. I also don't think that this is actually an issue of national import. Is Laura Loomer running for president? No.
Now, no, Laura Loomer is not running for president, but she spends an incredible amount of time with the Trump campaign, even flying with Trump to the debate in Philadelphia where he espoused the Haitian migrant conspiracy theory, which she believes, and she even went to Ground Zero with him on 9/11. Remember, Loomer is well known for her anti-Muslim rhetoric, though that didn't come up in the Senate hearing. Now, while Vance may not think she's relevant, other Republicans see her as a huge liability. Loomer has also tweeted, quote, Lindsey Graham has never been loyal to President Trump. When is Lindsey coming out of the closet? We all know you're gay, Lindsey, and that's okay, quote. Graham told the Washington Post last week that, quote, the history of statements by Ms. Loomer are beyond disturbing. I hope this problem gets resolved. I think we should be talking about things that people are concerned about, and this issue, I think, doesn't help the cause, quote. Even Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, known for her fiery and offensive rhetoric, quote retweeted Loomer saying, quote, this is appalling and extremely racist. It does not represent who we are as Republicans or MAGA. This does not represent President Trump, quote. And that was about the tweet about the curry. Trump, when asked about Loomer, however, said, quote, she is a strong person. She's got strong opinions, and I don't know what she said, but that's not up to me. Laura's a supporter. I don't control Laura. Laura has to say what she wants. She's a free spirit, quote. Back to Vance. He continued to espouse false theories about the Haitian immigrant population in Springfield, Ohio. I know I told you we weren't going to talk about this again, but it's still going on. And in fact, he even doubled down by saying, even if they are here legally under a program that Republican President George W. Bush signed into law, he will still refer to them as illegals.
This is a media and Kamala Harris fact check that I want to clarify and clear up right now. Now, the media loves to say that the Haitian migrants, hundreds of thousands of them, by the way, 20,000 in Springfield, but hundreds of thousands of them all across our country, they are here legally. And what they mean is that Kamala Harris used two separate programs, mass parole and temporary protective status. She used two programs to wave a wand and to say, we're not going to deport those people here. Well, if Kamala Harris waves the wand illegally and says these people are now here legally, I'm still going to call them an illegal alien. An illegal action from Kamala Harris does not make an alien legal. That is not how this works.
Now, the media is not creating the Haitian migrant story. Vance has already admitted to doing that himself. Now, moving to Trump, at an event focused on fighting anti-Semitism in Washington on Thursday, Trump said that if he doesn't win, it'll be because the Jewish people voted for the enemy. Now, a note here when it comes to this incendiary rhetoric, I can tell you that we have not heard the Harris campaign refer to the Trump campaign as the enemy. Nevertheless, here is Trump preemptively blaming the Jews.
The voters who happen to be Jewish. I don't know, do they know what the hell is happening? If I don't win this election, and the Jewish people would really have a lot to do with that if that happens, because at 40%, that means 60% of the people are voting for the enemy. Israel, in my opinion, will cease to exist within 2 years, and I believe I'm 100% right.
Harris, who is married to a Jewish man, has repeatedly expressed her support for the Jewish state of Israel and has reiterated that support face-to-face with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. It should be noted that Trump's remarks came just hours after CNN's report on North Carolina Republican gubernatorial candidate Mark Robinson calling himself, quote, black Nazi, quote, on a pornographic website more than a decade ago. They were made under a username that CNN was able to identify as Robinson by matching a litany of biographical details and a shared email address between the two. Now, CNN reports that many of Robinson's comments on Nude Africa stand in contrast to his public stances on issues such as abortion and transgender rights. I had to find some things that I could read to you, but there's so much graphic content out there. And I'm not saying go look for it yourself, but you know, the internet does exist. But here's one thing that maybe I could read, and this is something that Robinson wrote on that message board. He said, quote, I like watching, I don't know if I can read this. It takes the man out of it. Yeah, and yeah, I'm a perv too. I can read that. So there's that's part of it. There was so much there. Now, in an interview with CNN on Thursday, Robinson repeatedly denied that he made the comments on Nude Africa. Now, many folks, including Trump, were already actually distancing themselves from Robinson because he has a history of some pretty interesting remarks. But Governor Henry McMaster did headline a fundraiser for Robinson in June, despite his previous racist and homophobic comments. A little background from CNN, if you're wondering who this guy is. Robinson, whose political rise as a conservative internet personality started when a clip of him speaking at a city council meeting in April 2018 went viral, as he was speaking against a proposal to cancel a local gun show after the Parkland shooting. He then compared those survivors of the Parkland shooting to communists, among other controversial things he has said. That's what happens when a viral internet sensation becomes the nominee for governor in a swing state. Getting back on the trail, Trump participated in a town hall in Flint, Michigan this week. The event was moderated by Arkansas governor and former Trump administration press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Now, during this town hall, he said this about his assassination attempts when talking about tariffs on Chinese vehicles made in Mexico.
They're going to make their cars there, and they're going to sell them across our line, and we're going to take them, and we're not going to charge them tax. We're going to charge them, I'm telling you right now, I'm putting a 200% tariff on, which means they're unsellable. And then you wonder why I get shot at, right? You know, only consequential presidents get shot at. When I say something like that, you have countries saying, this guy, but... what can you do? You have to do what you have to do, right? We have to be brave. Otherwise, we're not going to have a country left.
He also gave this response to a woman who asked about food prices and how he would lower them.
So we have to start always with energy. Always. I don't want to be boring about it, but there's no bigger subject. It covers everything. If you make donuts, if you make cars, whatever you make, energy is a big deal. And we're going to get that. It's my ambition to get your energy bill within 12 months down 50%. If I can do that, you've done a hell of a job. 50. Interest rates are going to follow, and actually they're going to follow for another reason. The economy is now not good, and interest rates, you'll see, they'll do the rate cut and all the political stuff tomorrow, I think. And, you know, will he do a half a point? Will he do a quarter of a point? But the reason is because the economy is not good. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to do it. But we're going to get interest rates down, and we got to work with our farmers. Our farmers are being decimated right now. And, you know, one of the reasons is we allow a lot of farm product into our country. And we're going to have to be a little bit like other countries. We're not going to allow so much come. We're going to let our farmers go to work. And I don't know if you remember, I love the farmers because, you know, I had many meetings as president. I have this gorgeous room with this beautiful table that seats about 35 people. And I was with the farmers. Usually everybody wants something. They all want subsidy. But I was with the farmers, and I think you might have been there, actually, Sarah. I said, look, fellas, we're going to get you such a beautiful subsidy, meaning I'm going to do things. And one of the people raises and says, sir, honestly, we don't want a subsidy. This is the first time this ever happened to me. Everyone wants, they want money. They want to build windmills. We want money with these windmills. Hey, yay, yay. Anyway. But you know what? It was amazing. He said, almost tears in his eyes, they were getting decimated. We don't want a subsidy. We just want to play, you know, a fair level playing field.
And that was his answer on how to lower food prices. Now, on the Democratic side, Vice President Kamala Harris sat down with Oprah in the swing state of Michigan, where Harris brought up her gun ownership, as well as Oprah asking her how she has changed.
At the debate, I'm a gun owner. Tim Walz is a gun.
I did not know that.
If somebody breaks in my house, they're getting shot.
Yes. I hear that.
Probably should not have said that. But my staff will deal with that later. Yeah.
It seems to us that something happened to you the moment Joe Biden, President Biden, stepped aside and withdrew his candidacy, that a veil or something dropped and you just stepped into your power. I mean, literally, looking at you at a speech like the week before, which was a great speech, very nice. And then the next week, I saw you walking in the thing. And I said, what happened to you?
You know, we each have those moments in our lives where it's time to step up.
Time to step up.
Time to step up, you know.
Harris also participated in a 45-minute-long conversation with members of the National Association of Black Journalists on Tuesday in Philadelphia. She discussed the ongoing Springfield situation.
I know that regardless of someone's background, their race, their gender, their geographic location, I know that people are deeply troubled by what is happening to that community in Springfield, Ohio. And it's got to stop. And we've got to say that you cannot be entrusted with standing behind the seal of the President of the United States of America, engaging in that hateful rhetoric that, as usual, is designed to divide us as a country, is designed to have people pointing fingers at each other. It's designed to do that. And I think most people in our country, regardless of their race, are starting to see through this nonsense and to say, you know what, let's turn the page on this. This is exhausting and it's harmful and it's hateful and grounded in some age-old stuff that we should not have the tolerance for. So let's turn the page and chart a new way forward and say, you can't have that microphone again.
Okay, let's move on from the campaign trail. Wait, no, I'm being told there's a couple other bizarre things to report this week that you may have missed, including following the second assassination attempt on Trump's life, Elon Musk tweeted and then deleted, quote, and no one is even trying to assassinate Biden / Kamala, question face emoji. Quote, Musk eventually, like I said, deleted the post and then claimed it was a joke. The Secret Service is now investigating that tweet that went out to his nearly 200 million followers. Speaking of tweets, Vance on Tuesday, quote, retweeted Atlantic writer David Frum saying, quote, I'd say the most important difference is that people on your team tried to kill Donald Trump twice, quote. That's, again, another rumor being spread to millions of folks by J.D. Vance. All of these attempts are still under investigation, so it's a bit egregious to even be speculating. But what we know about the first gunman, Thomas Matthew Crooks, was that he was in fact a registered Republican in Pennsylvania, though he had no strong political ties and even looked at multiple political figures potentially to assassinate. Ryan Routh, the recent gunman in Florida, was registered as a Democrat in North Carolina, but switched to unaffiliated more than two decades ago, and he has given support to both Democrats and Republicans. Now, if we want to talk about political violence really quick, I will note that Cesar Sayoc, a Trump supporter, sent homemade pipe bombs to former President Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and other prominent Democrats in 2018. Yes, remember the MAGA bomber? He was sentenced to 20 years in prison back in 2019 after pleading guilty to mailing 16 pipe bombs to people he considered to be Trump's enemies. We are pretty wound up, so let's wind down now. Welcome to the wind down section, our little break from the news. We're glad you're here, A.T. Shire, lead podcast producer.
Yes. Welcome. Gavin. Yes. Thank you.
I'm glad that we made it to the wind down section.
Yeah. You were
that
getting
a lot.
This is a spicy episode.
You know, I've been trying to try and keep up. I write bits of the script throughout the week and try and keep up with the things. And come Thursday, come Friday, when I'm putting it together, I'm like, oh, my God, How did all this happen in one week?
I know.
Remember the days like this never used to, we have one of these things and it'd be a scandal for an entire
months.
Yes.
For a year.
Throwaway lines, and it's like, where?
I know. People are like bored by new assassination attempts. it's so crazy. And there's
calling for other people. Why aren't they wondering why they're not being assassinated?
They're absolute new crazy things every single second, every single day. But that's not why we're here, Gavin.
We're here
to wind down. Baby. Okay, and we got a call. So are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Namaste.
Hi, Gavin and AT. It's Joanna in New York. And I couldn't bear the thought of you not having another voicemail this for your next episode. But the only thing I really wanted to talk about was sports. Sorry, Gavin. I recently went to a football viewing party with my new boyfriend. It was the first time we'd ever watched a Bills game. We're in Bills Mafia country. So it was the first time we'd watched a Bills game together. But I understood the assignment. Half the time, if I'm attending an event, it's because I want to wear the outfit. I'm big into the outfit. I had on my Bills tee, my Bills sweatshirt, my Bills ball cap. I had a Bills throw blanket for when it got chilly. It was an outdoor thing. Everybody at the party, hat, jersey, Zuba pants. Nobody threw themselves through a table, but, you know, it wasn't a big party. Anyway, my date wore a black tee. And then when it got cold, he put on a black hoodie. He did not have a single accessory it just felt so strange. Literally, there was pyrotechnics at this house party for when the Bills got a touchdown. I could hear in the distance other neighbors setting off fireworks. And I show up with a guy who didn't even have a T-shirt on. Now, how do we feel about that? Do I buy him a T-shirt or do I let him be, you know, emo Bills fan? And my question to you is, when you're attending any kind of a sports function, are you just wearing whatever sports-related thing that you already have? Or do you make it a point to wear a team color? And if you don't have a team color, you just wear whatever. Okay. Thank you. Have a lovely day.
My bestie, Joanna. And the sender of the butter dishes.
Yes, multiple butter dishes.
I was just up in Rochester. I just saw her in early August. Wonderful trip. Got to meet her new boyfriend. Great guy. We'll get more into this in a minute. But Joanna, I love this boyfriend journey that you've been on. I've been learning all about this. She loves the guy. Great guy. But this sounds very controversial. But I will say that when I go to sporty events, i.e., the closest thing I'm doing is going to USC games. I have one polo, Ralph Lauren polo shirt
Ralph Lauren.
Which I got at a thrift store. I love it. It's more of a burgundy, but you can be garnet, whatever you want. But that's what I wear to the games.
Sure.
You know,
that's it's coverage.
And I actually have another Ralph Lauren orange polo shirt if I need to go to a Clemson game, I will go and be culturally appropriate. You know, I'm going to do it. Like, I'm not going to...
When in Rome.
I blend in. You know, when I worked in Columbus, Ohio, I was an OSU fan. When I worked in Baton Rouge, I was an LSU fan.
Who is the real Gavin?
I'm a state school stan.
He's a chameleon, Mr. Ripley, all of us.
So, yes, I'm going to go. I'm going to do what needs to be done. I don't go to viewing parties, but if I did, I would be...
You would never go.
Yeah.
You would never.
I don't want to see that side of my... I don't want to see that side of you.
No, I don't want you to any, but okay, Joanna.
But you have experience more than I do.
We should honestly call my wife, Caitlin, because she, I think, might be like your boyfriend. You'll have to call in and settle this, Joanna, because it's honestly perfect for this conspiratorial episode we have going on, because this, I think he might believe in the juju.
Mm-hmm.
And so watch Silver Linings Playbook if you want to see De Niro as someone like this. My father is like this.
My father?
And so... If you're watching the game, you can't wear the stuff. Otherwise, if they lose, you have jinxed them. Okay? That's the juju.
It's a personal thing, yeah.
Caitlin believes in the juju really big. She has certain ways she sits at certain times. She has different points where she does and does not look at the TV.
Wow.
If the Eagles lose, she'll be like, it's because I wore that shirt 2 days ago.
Oh, wow. She just carries that burden.
I inherited that from my father.
As some sort of like... anthropology. Anthropology. We're going to go shopping at anthropology first.
That's what we're talking about.
An anthropological study of the Shire household on Eagles game day, I'm told on Monday was pretty brutal.
The effects of it on the new generation.
Extrapolated to
exactly,
vis-a-vis America.
It was bad. It was tough. I knew the Eagles were going to lose when the timing was like that.
I didn't. Okay.
I know you don't want to talk about
this. Go ahead. Let it out.
I just want to say, let it out. I want to say, as a new father myself,
oh, God bless you.
As a father myself,
such a good father.
On my child, my daughter.
Oh my God, we love Rena. Rena, hello, honey.
On my daughter. No, it's all, I got to say, for the first Eagles loss with a daughter, it was a lot easier to get over it. Like, some of the easy.
Because you had perspective?
No, it's honestly not perspective. I just didn't have the mental bandwidth to deal with my negative feelings. Oh. I didn't have time to do it.
So we should get over things by having a child.
Everyone should have a kid. Everyone should get a kid. Name
that
Arena.
That will fix things, guys.
That's exactly right. You have a problem in your relationship? Have a kid about it.
Have a kid.
Have a kid about it. Exactly right. And that's we're going to end it right there. Have a good weekend.
We have gone from a relationship pod, fashion pod, yes, sports pod. We're all here for you guys. Let us know what we need to settle for you. 803-563-7169.
What juju you believe
in. Let us know about your freaky habits when it comes to, not freaky, just the habits when it comes to sports.
Now we have to stipulate this now because of
just
this world we live in.
Talking about the sports. And we can't wait to hear from you. We're going to look forward to your tics, your tricks, especially as spooky season approaches. What are you doing? What are your superstitions when it comes to sports? Your psyche. We're going to fix it. 803-563-0169. You can also stay up to date with the latest news on SCETV.org and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. The South Carolina Lead is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Birch is our executive producer. This podcast is produced with support from PRX and is made possible in part by a grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, as well as listener contributions to the ETV Endowment of South Carolina. Thank you. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. Superstition.
Yeah, lay it down, baby.
Writing's on the wall.
Lay it down.
Very superstition.
My Sherry Amour.
Happy birthday to you.